We all have this natural sense that our lives are out of harmony with God. We all go through life and we have this sense, and some people just don't care. Some people care and they hope that they're doing enough. Some are really burdened by it, but you'll never really come until you know God this way. What do I mean? God has not just been with me the whole way, he says, but notice what happened along the way. Everything God turned into blessing.
So you go through those times of backsliding and wondering, are you really saved at all? Or did you lose your salvation? And we've discussed that in the past. That's something that just doesn't happen. But still, we find ourselves wondering at times where we stand with God because of our own sin nature. But it's looking back over the course of time that we get a glimpse of God's faithfulness even when we are faithless. Welcome to Abounding Grace Radio. Pastor Chris Gordon has us in Genesis 35, The Prodigal Comes Home. Here's Pastor Chris.
We turn this morning in the Bible to the first book of the Bible, which is the book of Genesis, and we're working through this book. This morning we are considering the first 15 verses of Genesis chapter 35. And I spoke with a visitor last week who was here, and he said to me, he said, well, Pastor, he says, I heard you preach on two passages now since I've been here. I've been here twice. I heard you preach on two passages. The first was Lot and his daughters in the cave, and the second was the Dinah incident. And I thought to myself, well, if it follows that way, just wait for a few chapters more. Maybe he'll show up in the Judah and Tamar incident. Genesis has been challenging on many of these passages. And many of them really do show the dark side of what's wrong with our hearts and what's wrong with our lives. And just like this morning with the reading of the law, that it's a challenge for us to see that. And that's why you go through and you study the course of somebody's life like this in Jacob, you're noticing the real ups and downs, aren't you? And that's real to you. That's life. But the beautiful thing today is in Genesis chapter 35, we've got a real up moment. So as far down as the last section was, I hope you feel today how far up this one is and how the Lord is committed to bring us to this place. And so it's a passage that should greatly encourage you in the Christian life and Christian walk today. Genesis chapter 35, let's consider the first 15 verses. God said to Jacob, arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there. Make an altar there to the God who appeared to you when you fled from your brother Esau. So Jacob said to his household and to all who were with him, put away the foreign gods that are among you and purify yourselves and change your garments. Then let us arise and go up to Bethel so that I may make there an altar to the God who answers me in the day of my distress and has been with me wherever I have gone. So they gave to Jacob all the foreign gods that they had, and the rings that were in their ears. Jacob hid them under the terebinth tree that was near Shechem. And as they journeyed, a terror from God fell upon the cities that were around them, so that they did not pursue the sons of Jacob. And Jacob came to Luz, that is Bethel, which is in the land of Canaan, he and all the people who were with him. And there he built an altar and called the place El Bethel, because there God had revealed himself to him when he fled from his brother. And Deborah, Rebekah's nurse, died, and she was buried under an oak below Bethel. So he called its name Alam Bakuth. And God appeared to Jacob again when he came from Paddan Aram and blessed him. And God said to him, your name is Jacob. No longer shall your name be called Jacob, but Israel shall be your name. So he called his name Israel. And God said to him, I am God Almighty, be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall come from you, and kings shall come from your own body. The land that I give to Abraham and Isaac, I will give to you, and I will give the land to your offspring after you. Then God went up from him in the place where he had spoken with him. And Jacob set up a pillar in the place where he had spoken with him, a pillar of stone. He poured out a drink offering on it and poured oil on it. So Jacob called the name of the place where God had spoken with him, Bethel. May the Lord bless the hearing of his word. The scriptures everywhere are describing for us and showing for us what it looks like to return to the Lord, to come home to the Lord. Again, using that language of the prodigal son. When he came to himself, he says, I'm going back. I'm returning to my father. It's wonderful in his house. Why would I stay outside of his house? And that theme of returning to the Lord, that imagery that we have all over the scriptures, is described in a call form that the Lord gave throughout the Old Testament to his people to return to him. I think of Isaiah 55, let the wicked forsake his way and the unrighteous man his thoughts. Let him return to the Lord and he will have mercy on him and to our God, for he will abundantly pardon. In the book of Chronicles, you even had runners that were pictured as running out and giving this message of calling to return. The runners went through all Israel and Judah with letters from the king and his leaders and spoke according to the command of the king. Children of Israel, return to the Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, and he will return to you. All over. Come. Return. If I ask this morning, have you returned? How would you answer? Would that be a foreign concept to you? Would that be something that you've never really stopped and given a lot of thought of in the course of life, what it is to return to the Lord and what that looks like, and that is not just a one-time shot. It's actually something that will go on throughout the whole course of the Christian life. I want everyone this morning to look at Genesis 35, beginning at verse 1. You have a great call that God gives to Jacob here, and it's a very powerful call. It's an effectual call right at the beginning of Genesis 35, verse 1. And God said to Jacob, arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there. Make an altar there to the God who appeared to you when you fled from your brother Esau. I don't know how you feel when you read that. But what a wonderful calling that the Lord gives after a giant mess, isn't it? Come up to me. Come home to me. I want you to come home. Go up. Paul described the Christian life as this upward calling that God gives to us in Christ. Come. This scene had so much impact, I believe, as I was studying this week and thinking about the impact that this had on New Testament writers. This scene had so much impact on them that when they looked at this, they understood what was meant when they were describing the change that takes place of transitioning from the old life to the new life. And I think Genesis 35 was their passage to grasp what it looked like in reality. When they were describing what a changed life looked like, the new life, I believe they said, there it is. They looked at Genesis 35 and they said, see, there it is. I love this passage this morning because what we see here already is God showing us now, after this long run in the life of Jacob, the righteous life that he desires. And it's so offset. Jacob had been running throughout the course of his life. And do you know how long now? 30 years. Where were you 30 years ago? 20 years in Haran. And then this has been a 10-year mulling around in the wilderness. And boy, Israel would have a lot to think about when they looked back at the life of Jacob. For about 10 years it took him to get back. In fact, we studied last week that he stopped at one point, and before he had even entered the land, he builds a house. He wanted to root down. Before he had even come home to the Lord, he wants to stay out in the world and in the wilderness, and he builds a house. He builds his own house, and he builds booths for his livestock, and he sets himself up. And then, of course, he gets up after that, and he moves to Shechem. And one of the worst scenes in the Old Testament plays out that we looked at last week. Remember one of the worst scenes where he sits there, he shouldn't have been there, and lo and behold, his daughter goes out to see the daughters of the land, and she gets raped. And it turns into this snowball. I mean, what an awful scene of the sons taking the sword and living by the sword and wiping out an entire city of people because of this. So much so that now Jacob is the target in this life of revenge upon all the peoples of Canaan. Everyone's talking about this Jacob and his family, and they all now have the bullseye on him. And what moved me about the account, if you remember, is that in that entire chapter 34, God's name was not mentioned. We were getting a window into what if God said, okay, you want the life you want? Go, 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 go. And he let us run for a little bit. He gives us a taste a little bit of what life would be like without grace. And it would be absolutely awful. Our lives would spin out of control and they would unravel and you would utterly wreck your life. You wouldn't be here today. You wouldn't come home to the Lord. And the Lord is showing us that in one of the worst messes, and this is what really encourages me this morning as I'm preaching this and studying this, in one of the worst messes recorded in the life of Jacob, one of the worst choices he made in life, what do you have at the opening of chapter 35? God didn't say, that's it, I'm done with this bum. He comes to him and he calls him. God did not abandon him. God did not leave him. And we all should be standing back from this and thinking, that is remarkable. God's not mentioned in chapter 34. Jacob didn't want him. He's mentioned before, and it brackets the whole scene to show us, grace bracketed it before and after to teach us the great truth that God never left nor forsook him. Chapter 35 begins with God calling. God says, go up to Bethel and make an altar to your God. I love that. Did you notice how it's phrased? To your God, to God. This is what he's emphasizing here. To God, to the God who's redeemed you, Jacob. Go up to him. The God who had years ago dropped the ladder to you and came down to you and blessed you when you were running from your brother, when you ran and you shouldn't have run. You should have reconciled right then and there. When you ran and you can feel the weight of that, 30 years have passed. You've been running. And I can't help but think, you know, that there was a point at which Jacob could finally hear that call. I want you to ponder that just for a minute with me this morning. I'm not going to go real far into this chapter because I think it's one of the most glorious chapters in Genesis. I was always puzzled why God let him go in the first place. Jacob, you're going to go. You're going to run, but I'm going to be with you and I'll bring you back. And you stop and you say, well, why? Why even let him run this way? Why even let him do this and do these kind of things for 30 years of his life? And God had assured him in it, I'm going to be with you the whole way. And the Lord in his providence let him go. And he ends up in bondage and he ends up in exile and he ends up wrecking his life. And it climaxed here in the lowest point last time as the events of chapter 34 played out. The next words are, Jacob, come to me. Do you feel it? Come to the God who appeared to you. God's children, and you see it here, come to a point when they're finally able to receive that. You don't realize how many times in the course of ministry that ministers have stood up and said this to you. I mean, you know this is my job, right? My job is to say, come. My job is to say, come to the Lord. Return to the Lord. And over and over and over, ministers have said that, have said to you, come. And how many times have you heard that? Or maybe have not even heard it, and you thought, well, that's not really for me. That's for the bad sinners I was talking about earlier. That's for the bad ones, the ones who are out at the clubs. It's fascinating when Christ said, come. He said, come to me, you who are what? Weary and heavy laden, and I'll give you rest. You don't come if you're not weary. You don't come if you're not heavy laden. You don't come if something has not greatly burdened your heart. And the reality was, Jacob was weary at this point. It's been a long life. He's in the sunset years. We've been studying his life for some time. He's been a traveler and a pilgrim whose life, you know, has been, he will say at the very end when he's standing in front of Pharaoh, few and evil have been the days of my life. I know what I've done. I know the choices that I've made. I know that I wrecked my life many points along the way. And finally, in Genesis chapter 35, God comes and he says, come to me at Bethel. And I'm taken by this because, you know, nothing has been quick about it. I'm not challenging that at some point somebody's justified once and for all. But turning to the Lord, nothing has been quick. And how many of you have had sons and daughters, and we expect sometimes, and this is because of the Christianity today, where we want the whiz, bang, bam results right then and there. We want it all quick. We want it all, we want to supersize it today. Nothing's been quick. God has been so patient with this man. I'm overwhelmed by it. I'm puzzled by it. Because which one of us would ever be this patient with somebody else? The reality is Jacob is weary. And what I love about it is God is inviting Jacob to consider what he experienced along the way. This is where the passage really begins to strike hard. God is inviting Jacob to reflect upon what he's experienced over these 30 years. When he stood at Bethel 30 years ago, God made a promise to him. Remember it? "Behold, Jacob, I am with you, and I will keep you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I have done what I promised," which is meaning he's never leaving. He's going to fulfill. He's going to bring him back. Through a life of falls and backslidings, here we are years later. What's the next destination for Jacob? Bethel. Jacob, there. Come there. Now, what do you think's going through the mind of Jacob? Here's where verse 3 is one of the most powerful verses in the text itself. I want everyone to look at verse 3. Jacob says, "Then let us arise and go up to Bethel, so that I may make an altar there to the God who answers me in the day of my distress and has been with me wherever I have gone." As he comes to his sunset years, as he begins to reflect and he looks back over his life, he begins to ponder this promise of God. He begins to think about the promise of God. God said years ago, "I will be with you." And what has finally wooed him? What has finally won him? He looks at his family and he finally says, "Now, let's go to Bethel. I need to worship." Why? Because he's been with me all these years, as he said. He kept his promise. He fulfilled his promise. And I believe this is a very big moment in the life of Jacob. A very big moment in the life of Jacob. Realizing something about the Lord. We all have this natural sense that our lives are out of harmony with God. We all go through life and we have this sense. And some people just don't care. Some people care and they hope that they're doing enough. As I said earlier, that God will accept them. Some are really burdened by it. But you'll never really come. This is the point. You'll never really come until you know God this way. What do I mean? God has not just been with me the whole way, he says. But notice what happened along the way when we reflect upon it. Everything God turned into blessing. He plundered Laban. He flourished and blessed Jacob. You're going to see what he did even after this event in Genesis 34. And Jacob is able now finally to turn around and look back over the course of life and realize as he's standing there, there are 12 sons right here through all that. And he comes out of that bondage full and rich. And the only reason is every step of the way, he's now reflecting, "The Lord has carried me. I got to go back. I need to get back." God's gracious descent upon him from start to finish, from start when he started to run, when he started to run, and then from finish when he's right at Bethel. God had descended both times. God had preserved him the whole way. And this is our lives as Christians. Do you pause and think about where you've been in life? If you look back and you think about your choices and where it could have gone, And then you start to reflect upon where it is today. What do you see? What do you see looking back? Do you see his presence? Do you see his blessing? Has God failed at any point along the way? It's such an important question. Because this is what begets faith. When we stand up and say, I want you to think, when you stood up years ago and you say, based on the same promises that were made to Jacob, God said he would do this for us. God promised that if we look to his son, we would be saved. And he promised he would never leave us nor forsake us. I want you to think for a minute about your profession of faith. I want you to think about it. You stood up and you were responding to promises that were made to you. You stood up and you were responding. But we really didn't know when we stood up here and we made the profession of faith, we really didn't know what his commitment to that would look like. And we really didn't know what our commitment to that would look like. You were somewhat naive when you did it. And it's only when you have some distance from that, when you have some time that's gone forward, and when he blesses us and you think about the blessing of having life to be able to see these things, that there's some distance and some great moment that you begin to turn around and you say, my, my, he's kept it. He remembered his covenant. His steadfast love, says the psalmist, is from everlasting to everlasting.
Talk about amazing grace. Even when we don't deserve it, God's faithfulness still comes through and reminds us that there is hope. What an everlasting love our God has for us, huh? Man, real encouragement here today. And this is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Well, in closing our time together today, I'm reminded of other resource materials we have available at our website that would complement what we've heard today. agradio.org is a great place to go if you would like to know more about us and take advantage of other resource materials we have there. And if you have a question that you would like to address Pastor Chris with, maybe today's broadcast has sparked a thought or two, a question, please, by all means, send it off to us. Now, you can either email that to us through our website, agradio.org, or better yet, voice it through your voice memo app. Record your question, your name, and where you're calling from, and then send that to questions@agradio.org. That's questions@agradio.org. You're also welcome to reach us by phone. The number is 888-504-8805. Abounding Grace Radio is also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can visit our website for links to the platform that you prefer to follow. One final note as we close out our program today, we are listener-supported, which means friends of the ministry come alongside and partner with us financially and prayerfully, ensuring that this program continues right here on this radio station. You see, we look to friends like you to help ensure that this broadcast continues to spread the gospel of grace wherever we're at. If you would like to be a part of that, a small gift, large gift, one time or an ongoing monthly gift, we'd love to hear from you. agradio.org, you can give securely online, 888-504-8805, or write to us, Abounding Grace Radio, P.O. Box 732, Linden, Washington. The zip code is 98264. Well, tomorrow on Abounding Grace Radio, we'll continue where we left off today, looking at the prodigal returning and the hope that is held out to us in the amazing love of Christ and his grace. Here's Pastor Chris to give us a sneak peek at tomorrow's program.
God has said, I love to dwell with my saints on the Lord's Day and on the Sabbath to be with them and spiritually nourish them. And you're saying, when you want to come up, that's where I got to go. I don't have to go to church today. No, you got to go to God today. You're going to El Bethel today. The God of the house. And it's sad when that's our struggle because of sin, when this has no importance. This is what we're trying to convince young people about. The greatest purpose in life is to what? To know him and enjoy him. And that's what makes worship so special. It's because this is where God has chosen to reveal himself. This is where God has called us This is why you have in the Psalms, my heart thirsts for the living God. When do I get to come and appear before El?
Abounding Grace is brought to you on this radio station by Abounding Grace Radio Ministries.
Hi, I'm Chris Gordon, the host of Abounding Grace Radio. I'm also the pastor of the Escondido United Reformed Church. If you are local to Southern California and live near the Escondido area, we would love to see you at one of our worship services on Sunday. We worship at 9:30 a.m. and 6 o'clock p.m. at the Escondido United Reformed Church, 1864 North Broadway here in Escondido. You can find us on the web at www.escondidourc.org. EscondidoURC.org. The Escondido United Reformed Church, a place where the Bible is sincerely believed and faithfully taught.